couple of days back, someone sent me this article which argues that the UK owes India $45 trillion in stolen money, dating back to the East India Company and the British Raj. This is one of the most egregiously incorrect pieces I've ever seen published anywhere. The link was to Al Jazeera, but their source was an article in this book published by Columbia University Press by the Indian Marxist economist Upna Patnaik. Now, the trouble with these claims is that they make no sense whatsoever, because even if you adjust for inflation, the UK was not making $45 trillion during the empire years. If you look at this table, you can see total GDP in 2015 pounds sterling. If you add up all the GDP numbers from 1840 to 1950, it still only comes to about 24.45 trillion pounds all in. I've got that figure by multiplying these decade averages by 10 and then adding them all up. Now consider that it has been estimated that the entire empire accounted for just 1.1% of the gross national product in 1870 and 3.3% in 1913. And with these figures in mind, you can see how ridiculous the $45 trillion number is. Incidentally, around 37% of the UK's tax spend at this time went on the empire, and it went on defence spending. That's defence in India, Africa, and wherever else the empire spread. Now, it just so happens that I have the gross public expenditure numbers for the 19th century right here. Seems that in most years, the UK government spent between £50 million and £100 million, going over that only at the height of the Napoleonic Wars. Taking 1870 as our benchmark year, public expenditure was £67.1 million, which is around £2.7 billion in 2015 money, of which around £2.6 billion was spent on defence and running the empire. If the empire was bringing in 1.1% of GDP at that time, it was making only around £1.3 billion in 2015 money, which is basically half of the defence spend. We could say then that for every £1 the UK taxpayer was spending on the empire, it was losing 50 pence. The empire was a demonstrable cost. And this has been known by economists of all stripes, from Keynesians to the Austrian school, for decades. But anyway, let's indulge Professor Panek here a little bit, shall we? And assume that India was solely responsible for all empire income, and to assume that it accounted for 4% of the UK's GDP, which we know overestimates it greatly. Let's be fair here. Her time range is 1765 to 1938, and my estimate of 24.45 trillion in 2015 pounds, total GDP for the UK is from 1840 to 1950. So the GDP from 1765 to 1840 is, of course, much smaller than what went later. But let's be completely reckless here and simply double the number that I've given already. That is, let us assume that the UK's GDP was 24.45 trillion from 1765 to 1840, which it obviously wasn't. 4% of that number is still only 1.95 trillion pounds. So even with wildly overestimating the empire's contribution to GDP, assuming that India is responsible for all of it, ignoring UK tax spend on the empire, and wildly overestimating the UK's total GDP in this way, the number is still a long, long way from the $45 trillion that Professor Panek is claiming. So how does she get to this absurd number? Professor Pat Naik claims that the East India Company and the Raj siphoned out, that's her term, £9.2 billion from India over this 2,000-year period. She gets to this number by using a 5% compound interest accumulator. That looks something like this. Anyway, $1,000 in 1800 accumulates around $2 million of interest over 219 years. And so if you add it all up, the balance comes to something like $46.6 million from an initial $1,000 back in 1800. And this is the method that she uses to reach this number of £9.2 billion. And then she uses the historical exchange rate of, you know, back in 1800 of $4.8 to the pound to get to this number of $45 trillion. Now this, as far as I can tell, is total insanity based on a wild set of assumptions and also historically bafflingly moving forward 219 years and then using a historical exchange rate to convert it again. Don't ask me, this is Marxist economics, but it seems like complete rubbish. Now, I am not wishing to defend the British Empire in this video, but rather correcting bad data. This comprehensive report on Indian economic growth, compiled by proper economists in 2003, shows that just prior to independence, over 70% of the Indian economy was homegrown, with foreigners owning only 25% of total output. And I quote, "One of the legacies of the British rule was an efficient civil service and administrative structure. This administrative apparatus stood free India in good stead. They left the country with a fiscal surplus and well-established private property rights. The literacy rate had improved by 10% since 1901. The death rate had almost halved, and the infant mortality rate declined by 42%. Now, the Indian economy is widely perceived to have stagnated during this period, but that is because it has primarily an agricultural base, and Indian farmers, for whatever reason, hadn't invested in modern methods. I know, for example, that after the 1870s, Britain was importing most of its wheat from the USA, which was already using tractors and combine harvesters and more efficient modern methods. It's not exactly the UK government's fault that Indian entrepreneurs in the rural sector didn't modernize. In other sectors, industry, for example, which was almost exclusively Indian owned and operated, you can see pretty healthy growth in the pre-independence years of between 2.7 and 7% from 1900 to 1947. This was with zero protections or tariffs, just a completely free trade policy. I mean, agriculture was in decline everywhere, while industry was in the ascendancy. I mean, join the club, India. This was happening all over the world, and it is entirely to be expected. Of course, after 1947, India embarked on a socialist-style government based on import controls, preserving traditional methods of production, direct state intervention into markets, presumably something more like what Professor Pat Naik wants. And this famously resulted in what is called the Hindu rate of growth, which resulted in stagnation, starvation, and more people living under the poverty line than previously. You can see that compared with China, South Korea, and Taiwan, the increase in the average Indian income between 1947 and 1999 was tiny. Incidentally, I was interested in what the situation was before 1947. I found here a study on average Indian wages in constant rupees. The column on the left is labourers' real wages in 1913 rupees. The one in the middle is the wages of craftsmen, and the one on the right is the nominal consumer price index, which means how much your typical basic goods are. Generally, as this goes up, there is inflation. So just looking on this first page, for example, you can see that between 1800 and 1804, there was, for some reason, a 90% increase in prices at the time when wages were falling. Without even looking it up, This looks like a severe economic crisis for India during the dying years of the old Mughal Empire, with a severe price shock. The East India Company had already taken control of Bengal by this time, but you would have to look up exactly what was causing this price shock. Anyway, what these data show is a gradual increase in labourer wages over the 19th century, which seemed to stabilise around 0.3 of the 1913 rupee mark, and a significant increase in craftsman wages, which hit a 1913 rupee per day in 1841, at a time the prices were falling. Second half of the 19th century, the Raj took over in 1858, by the way, look a little bit rougher. Prices go up and down, wages seem fairly stable around that 0.3 mark for the labourer, around 0.8 for the craftsman. There's also some general improvement after World War One, with the labourer wages hitting 0.56 in 1932 and craftsman wages hitting a staggering 1.78 in 1935. They seem to drop again during World War Two, but 1 year before independence, in 1946, they were back up to 0.43 for the labourer and 0.78 respectively for the craftsman. Then Gandhi comes in and does his thing, the first government, Nehru and all that. Wages fall back down to 19th century levels by the mid-1960s. In fact, craftsman wages had more than halved from 1935 to 1964. Labour wages more than halved from 1955 to 1964. So this was a pretty bad decade under socialist planning. Look at what happens in the 1960s now. In 1977, labourer wages drop to a miserable 0.17 1913 rupees, the lowest they had been since 1804, and the craftsman not faring much better. The real wages in the 1980s in India were no better than they were for most of the 19th century, and for many years they were actually worse. It's only in the 1990s, when some market liberalisation and a new way of economic thinking finally came in, that those wage rates start climbing back up. If you're wondering about the soaring CPI numbers on the right-hand column, well, it seems that that massive increase is down to this increase in the money supply by the looks of things. All right, that'll do. Does the UK owe India $45 trillion? Of course not. Now get out.